What's up? What's up, everybody? Welcome to episode 44 of The Overview. I'm Chanman V, and we got Jason and Fishsticks as like still people right now. What's up, guys?
Hey, how's it going, everybody?
That's actually my permanent face.
That is his permanent face.
That is me.
Well, I needed to find like this really attractive picture of Jason since we have to see him like the way he is all the time, and that, you know, that's all I could find, right? You know,
I mean, it's better than the shitty goatee I have going on right now. So I'll
give you that. That's what I'm saying. It's just like totally, man, totally. So, but we're definitely happy to be welcoming our first time guest, Hyped from Team Immortals, fresh off the win at NGE this past weekend. Welcome to the show, man.
Thanks for having me. Just disclaimer: this is not my room.
It's not your room. Whose room is it?
It's an awesome room. I don't know.
Actually, I have not seen Totoro, don't tell anyone. But yeah.
What?
It's my girlfriend's room.
What? I'm a great film.
Yeah.
Really? Wow. Okay.
That's... So you're saying you're taken. I'm sorry, ladies.
You're saying you're taken. Oh, man.
Spoilers.
Spoilers. Yeah, definitely. But yeah, so we got lots to talk about. NG is going to be obviously a huge focus given that, we have a pleasure Hype being here and getting a chance to tell us all about their journey and just the victories, what they're, maybe they're doing with all that money they just won. But also we've got a little bit of news, just some general Overwatch and even a buff to D.Va that we're going to talk a little bit about. Just some new segments we're going to do, like Tip of the Week. I think we did that like a few weeks ago, but bringing that back, as well as a topic of the week that just something that we can discuss that's particularly with esports and just the popularity of Overwatch esports. And then lastly, we've got some Q&A, as always, from a couple, actually a patron and a viewer. If you guys, not a patron, sorry, just a viewer and just a couple of viewers. But if you guys want to write in your emails, if you're a listener of the show or you can't watch this live, go ahead and email those to theoverview@chimanv.tv. And we'll get to it next week. Okay, so NGE, Hyped. Obviously a fantastic event for you guys. But before the finals actually got started over the weekend at PAX South, there was actually a bit of news that came out. One of them, particularly with your team Immortals, Nomi, your tank, was actually not able to make the finals because of visa issues. So how crazy was that? And, that you had to replace him with your coach, Chance.
It's insane. We only knew, we knew it was a possibility, but we were all kind of hoping, crossing our fingers. But we found out for sure that he was 90% sure not it wasn't going to happen in time.
Right.
Only about a week before, and we had pretty light scrims that week before because we kind of wanted to. We were going to play an A-man, but we cut that out. And it was kind of a rest and recover type of time. And we're like, oh, we really need to practice this chance. We didn't really think about getting another tank because even though here's another fun story, even though Chance was a top tank and when you can animation cancel and in Northern Gaming Red back in his day, he actually hadn't been playing. He I don't know what happened to his computer, if it broke or if he gave it to someone else, but he'd just been watching our scrims and coaching us through a laptop. So he hadn't even been playing the game. He's convinced that his reaction time had just dropped off since he started soft playing the game. And basically he got it all together and we had very little scrims, but we got him in. The first scrim was actually against Complexity, which is, one of our harder teams to scrim. Mm-hmm. And he actually did amazing. So even though he'd been away from the game, just the fact that he knows all of us, he's been watching our scrims, he knows our strats, mm-hmm. made it a lot easier to bring him in than rather than some Reinhardt Ringer. We were looking into that, but we ultimately decided Chance.
If you needed a reaction time, then I don't think Wieghaven would be a pro player. Sorry, Wieghaven, I love you, bro.
Ouch.
But
wow.
What? There's a reason he was kicked off the team in Battlefield.
Okay.
But for those of you who are not necessarily aware, Chance has been playing in the scene since the early days of the closed beta. So we've seen this guy play on multiple different teams in multiple different eras of the game, from closed beta until pretty recently, honestly. But yeah, as Hype said, he's been kind of out of the scene for a little while, but obviously still got it. We saw it unfold this weekend.
It's pretty shocking to me because I just assumed that Chance, had been kind of pseudo playing with you guys while coaching you guys, maybe stepping in every once in a while when, I don't know, a player can't make practice. So this transition would be, was pretty seamless. Was a plan B this whole time. But man, hearing that basically it was not at all, and he hadn't been playing.
He only got like this a good makes 10 it hours, even, yeah. maybe, of scrims with him beforehand.
That's
and, but he was doing really good. But then, you know, like Kangarna or Ghost specifically targeted him, and that was something obviously he didn't have experience with. You know, like he's still like carrying some stuff over from before, but like once the team starts focusing you, like all of a sudden it's a lot harder to perform, especially when you're like only when you're not expecting that. So that was their strategy, and it worked very well. And he was like totally out of it after our loss to them the first game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and he didn't know what he's doing wrong. He's on his head. We had to calm him down and be like, "It's okay. We can do this." Also, when we were watching their game before we played them, he's like, "All right, I know how to beat iRemix. I got this. I know what to do." And then first game in, he just like pinned across the map and dead. I'm like, "Well, it's gonna be tough."
Right. Yeah. No, that's really cool. I mean, because it just, I guess from a spectator standpoint, it seemed like, you know, Ghost got off to a really quick start, and you guys were a little bit slow to get going. But now, after hearing that, that's actually cool. This behind the scenes type of thing, and the adjustment that Chance made, that's cool.
Yeah, their strength is that they're extremely aggressive, and it's actually pretty hard to counter aggression directly. Like, you'd think you want to back up, but it kind of just feeds into their plan more. And they're so experienced at being aggressive that it really takes a while to figure out how to beat them. And, you know, when you get destroyed by aggression one round, you're like, "Oh my God, these guys are amazing. We can't do anything." Kind of has that effect of like making you feel helpless. But for teams that are able to adapt, like Liquid proved, we actually learned a lot from Liquid. Like, Liquid had their backs up against the wall in the tournament itself, and especially against Kangarna. And they were the first ones to really, like, Kangarna was on a win streak in the round robin phase. And they came out with a strategy of, it was like D.Va, Zarya, Tracer, with the Tracer doing a lot of distraction before their aggression could start, and we kind of copied that strategy, and it worked for us as well. So it just proves that like teams that can adapt are gonna make it in the long run.
Yep, that's what we've been pretty much saying for a while now. It's just like, I think it's slowly getting to the point where the game is, or at least the highest of level or competitive pro scene is gonna start getting to that point. But another bit of news too, just before we really dive into the matches, Kangarna was acquired by Ghost Esports, you know, right before this. So, you know, they were obviously sporting the Ghost jerseys and everything, but that's pretty cool. You know, given that, I mean, it just shows you that NGE, you know, was really successful for you guys, as well as teams like Kangarna, specifically, I think Kangarna, you two, really bringing you guys exposure, bringing, you know, just the signing for Kangarna. So, really happy to see that actually in the community, and hopefully more third party event organizers will get a chance to, you know, bring even more exposure to more teams in NA and as EU, like EU, please, like somebody do something for those EU teams over there.
Because... Hey, chime in. In the works.
Okay. All right. Maybe ESL will do it. what do you guys think of that? Kangarna being signed by Ghost Esports. I don't know that much about Ghost Esports, so I don't know if you guys do.
Well, they said in like their interview they have unlimited resources from Ghost. I don't know what that actually means.
Wow. Okay.
If you have billionaire
owner, I guess.
Jeez.
Like, I'm expecting like a full like buffet inside their gaming house with like personal masseuses while they're playing. Like, I don't know what that actually means, but hey, good on them to be picked up. Like, I think in general, like you said, Chairman, NGE was huge just for North America as a whole, like in the Overwatch scene that Overwatch is, or EU is currently lacking.
Yeah, absolutely. Dan, any thoughts?
It's just yet another team getting picked up. And you still have to look to the TSMs and CLGs of the world. Well, CLG has a team now. I take it back. They already got one. But you still got to look at the major brands that have made their intention to get into Overwatch known that are still yet to jump into the scene. There's less and less teams. Like, every single week, there's less and less teams even available. So you got to wonder what they're working on in the background. Obviously, there are free agents floating around, so you can try and put together another team, but you gotta start acting quickly if you're TSM right now. Maybe they are, I don't know. Probably they are in the background, but yeah, it's awesome to see.
I'm hyped for you. Like, what did NG, I mean, obviously the win is, you got $100,000 or $40,000, and you know, being the winner obviously brings a ton of exposure, but even leading up, just all the rounds that happened the last 5 weeks, thoughts on just that, just being, you know, having just NGE being, you know, not necessarily considered the top tier event, given that, well, you know, with Apex, you know, I guess coming back like the kind of the last few weeks of NGE, but NGE kind of getting its own like end of December and getting a chance for you guys to really get a lot of exposure. Yeah, talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, right off the bat, we were like, when we first heard about it, must have been November, maybe even October. We were like fresh off our E-League loss where we didn't even went around. And we heard, oh, 100K tournament. And like, I know in the back of my head, I was like, oh, this will be, well, we're never going to get first, but this will be a big, we're never going to get that 100K. But, you know, this will be a big tournament for us. I like this. This is awesome. The whatever the pre-qualifier stage was before the round robin, where it was four different qualifiers week after week where you have all these mid-tier teams threatening to beat top tier teams. I thought that was awesome from a spectator point of view. From a player point of view, it's really scary when you get one of those really good lower tier teams early in the bracket and, you know, with the points, and it's very scary and stressful, but I thought it was awesome from a spectator point of view. We managed to clutch it out at the end. That was pretty awesome. And then the round robin stage was, my team was complaining about it. They were like, oh, we don't want to play week after week. It's so stressful. It's way harder than scrimming. But I mean, I mean, as a competitor with experience, I know that like round robin is the way to go. You don't want single limb. You don't want double limb. Round robin is the way to go. And it gave us a ton of exposure. It was amazing for us. And I like introduced everyone to these other up and coming teams and like which ones are like the up and coming teams and which ones are just, you know, not, for example, like Garna and Spicy Boys, I would say, are on a different level than some of the other up and coming teams. And then it kind of introduced everyone to Luminosity a little bit more, the new Luminosity. They've been our scrim partners forever and we knew they were amazing, but they didn't have as much exposure. So it was great for teams like that. And then LAN Finals was pretty awesome.
LAN Finals. You can imagine.
Well, let's talk about the LAN Finals a little bit here. In terms of your entire team, like how many people have had LAN exposure before in front of an audience? Because I'm assuming that had to have affected some of the players, like the nerves coming from that.
Yeah, so about, four of us were at E-League, and then Verbo, it was his first time, and then Chance, it was his first time for Overwatch. So yeah, we were pretty experienced, and I don't think Verbo felt like especially, I actually have to talk to him about it, but he didn't seem that nervous. Everyone was saying how nervous they were, or like feeling like weird before getting on stage, but once you sit in front of a screen with Overwatch on it, you just feel at home pretty much no matter where you are. There were no booths, which would have been awesome, but I didn't feel like the computers were great, and I felt like really good in that chair, and the sound was fine. Whereas like E-League, the computers there were like actually really bad. People complained about it. They got the computers upgraded by the second day, but we were already eliminated by then. So it's like you're playing on these computers that are pretty bad, and you know the other team's also playing on computers that aren't the best, but when you're losing, you're like, you just feel like, you know, it's out of your control almost. It's not, but you know, it feels awful. But the computers here were amazing.
That's good. I mean, that was actually one thing that I think we might have mentioned last week, where just please have good computers, you know, given that spec south and everything. But what was the actual venue like? Because we didn't really get a chance to see it too much on cam, to be honest. Like maybe there were a few shots every once in a while, but, you know, was there a huge crowd? Where were you guys exactly at the venue?
I don't know how to describe it. It's kind of like an L shape where most of all the booths and stuff were in this L, and then we were kind of in like the leg of the L.
Okay, so you were on the floor. It wasn't like this set aside stage or anything like that. Okay, cool.
The crowd was pretty big. It was its own stage, but it was like, just in a corner of the convention center. But it was in the same room, basically, just on the one side.
Okay.
Yeah, actually, I don't know why the production didn't show the audience more, because every time they did, you could see that it was completely packed, even with people lined up around the seats, just trying to absorb the games and get in there, which was really cool, because PAX is a general gaming convention. It's not esports focused at all. So the fact that there was so much organic interest, I thought was really encouraging. I don't know. It's just really cool to see esports at PAX in general, but then Overwatch particularly performing so well. I mean, we haven't had a lot of big audiences for Overwatch tournaments in the past in terms of like total number of seats, and it's not like there were thousands of seats there were only hundreds, but they were full for the majority of the tournament. Is that correct, Hyped?
If you like, whenever we wanted to watch, we'd have to stand. All the seats were full, and lots of people standing around.
Awesome.
Definitely great.
And when I was playing, the sound canceling was pretty good, but I could my monitor was like shaking a little bit when people were really clapping.
Nice. That's probably, I mean, that pumps you up.
Exactly. That's good stuff. So going into the tournament, like which teams were you afraid of, or who did you think would be the biggest competition for you guys?
Well, So we were against Luminosity on the other side of the bracket, mm-hmm. was Ghost and Complexity, and we were like 99% sure we were going to face Complexity in the finals, but we were definitely scared of Luminosity. That was a huge round there. We scrimmed them almost more than anybody else, and so they know us, we know them. They were kind of pushing the 3 DPS thing before it was even the patch, and you know, all the teams there, we didn't really get to practice that much on the patch. Everyone was kind of sticking to the old patch. For some reason, everybody was just scrimming FaZe. FaZe is like really scrimming a bunch. Like everyone was like looking for scrims like while we're at the tournament the day before and during for warm up, and everyone was just scrimming FaZe at different times, and they were like really pioneering the 3 DPS thing. And the first day we play them, we just roll out with like 3 tanks, 4 tanks, and we're like, all right, we'll let them figure it out. If it's crushing us, we'll adapt. But it wasn't really crushing us. And then we scrimmed them like again that day, and we were doing fine. Then like the third, right, our warm up scrim for Luminosity, that's when they started to really figure it out, and they were like kind of crushing us with the 3 DPS. And we're like, oh boy, this might be rough, because we know Luminosity might roll out with that as well. But there's something about losing a scrim, right? As losing your warm-up scrim really hard, that makes you play better in the tournament.
Oh, and, wow. Okay, yeah. I would think okay, that it might well. Make you question things more.
Oh, yeah. You know, you never want to, like, win your scrim hard before a tournament, because then you don't try as hard.
That's cool.
You know?
Yeah.
Yeah. Really, I don't know. It kicks everyone into gear.
Mm-hmm. Well, since you mentioned the meta and the compositions going into this, I do want to drill down a little bit more to get your perspective on where you think things are with this new patch. Obviously, for those tuning in just now, we're talking to Hyped from Immortals, just won the most recent major tournament in the Overwatch scene this last weekend, and curious to get his thoughts on the current meta. Obviously, in the last patch, triple tank was basically a must, almost every single team running with triple or even quad tank. We did still see triple tank a little bit from you guys, more so from some other teams as well. We even saw a tiny bit of quad tank, but we did also see more 2-2-2 lineups. Where do you think we're at with this patch? You know, Ana's been adjusted downwards, D.Va's been adjusted downwards. Does this mean 2-2-2 is the new standard, or just what are your thoughts on the current state of meta?
Yeah, so we're actually a little bit behind the meta because we were practicing the tournament. We kind of want to stick to what we know, but I will say that I'm like the Roadhog changes are. He's still going to be around. People are saying people like him better on defense now rather than both offense and defense. So I think he's going to be around. I think D.Va was like overpowered, and people could play her and be effective with her, like doing whatever they wanted. So nobody really pushed the limits of what you could do with her and like how to even play her correctly, because you could just play her, like I said, however you want, and you'd be effective.
Yeah.
So I still think, like, I played her a tiny bit before the patch, and maybe like one or two other people played her. And so I'm going to be continuing to push the limits with her. As much as people hate her as a character, I think she has a lot of potential, especially just when the enemy has high ground, you can do a lot. And like before the patch, when people weren't playing D.Va, like just like the methods that people learned to eat gravitons more consistently, like you see that improve. Like when D.Va was like, when the patch first hit, you didn't really see your gravitons get eaten. But as it went on, like you see the Azaris like really careful with their graviton, they still get it eaten. They're like, what? I was pointing at the ground, I was crouching, how did they eat it? But the D.Va just got better. And so like, I think that's a good example of just like people really pushing the limits. And I actually think the change, a lot of people are complaining about the change.
Oh my gosh, that's crazy.
So yeah, if you're a D.Va player, you know this, like if something's point blank, if something's like touching, like if an Ana is like touching your body, she can just sleep dart you through the matrix, and Roadhogs can shoot their hook target, and then Zarya's can point directly to the ground, crouch, and shoot their graviton. And those are things you can't really eat if they do it correctly. But now with this change, you can. And I think that's really cool. So even if D.Va's like not played at all, I think Overwatch is in a really cool place. If you're Zarya, you use your graviton, you know the enemy Zarya has their graviton, you swap to D.Va for a chance to eat it. I think that's really cool. If like characters are just hot swap too, even just for like a push or two.
Yeah.
I think that's really cool.
And for those of you that don't know what he's talking about with the D.Va buff, it was announced this past week that there is a tweak that they're making to D.Va where the matrix, before the matrix, even though you were say like a Roadhog, like he was saying, that was inside of the matrix, the bullet that leaves the gun or whatever it is that actually leaves the weapon actually gets a chance to hit something. The matrix doesn't absorb it literally as it's coming out of the nozzle of the gun. Now it actually does. So it literally can't do any damage, or, you know, like he said with the graviton, it can't get the graviton straight to the ground, you know, before it happens. And that's actually pretty crazy in terms of, like, even just those examples you mentioned.
I mean, it basically means that D.Va is a Roadhog counter in a way. If you see your teammate get hooked, it's pretty easy to react to that and throw your matrix up. But before we dive into new patch stuff, I still want to drill a little bit harder on this. Like, what do you think about triple tank, one DPS versus 2-2-2 versus maybe even three DPS? Like, do you have a sense of relative strength, or can teams kind of do whatever they want? Like, just give me your feelings on that.
Okay, so I'll keep it simple. At first, I think Genji's definitely going to see more play. That's what our Genji's noticed. We have a great Genji. That's good for us. 3 DPS or 3 tank is still good. 3 DPS with dive, and sometimes you got the it's like dive with a Pharah. I think those comps have like almost infinite skill ceiling, because like if your coordination's on point, you have a rocket coming in, you have shurikens coming in, you have a trace on you, like how are you not going to kill someone, right? So I think that like, the sky's the limit with that, and those comps will always be viable as teams get more and more coordinated. And it's super hard to beat. And then I've talked to everybody, and everyone just feels like dive is stronger than it was.
That's good to hear. That's cool. Yeah.
Okay. So sounds like everything's still viable. Like you can do what you can play however you want, maybe.
Yeah. But yeah.
Who does it the best? Whoever does what they want to do the best, right? I think but that's great. That's where we want the meta, where there's a lot of different options. And, you know, I think a lot of us were wondering if these nerfs to Ana and D.Va were enough. And at least preliminary, looking at it preliminary wise, it looks like it is enough to actually be changing things, and having three DPS actually be an option. That's really cool.
Yes, I get to ask something finally. I have a question for you guys.
Jump in anytime.
Because after the Alienware Monthly Melee, we were all talking while we're casting about teams being affected negatively from the patch and being affected positively from the patch. For example, Hammer Esports, they ran pretty much triple quad tank the entire time. They're really aggressive with it, and that was a team that we said might suffer quite a bit coming into the new patch. How do you feel like it's affected you guys as a team? Do you feel like you're stronger now and you're able to play to more strengths, or do you feel like you're potentially weaker because before you were playing kind of behind the meta?
I feel like for me personally, I'm like receiving a nerf because I played like D.Va almost exclusively, and you know, I thought I was like pretty good at it and like really pushing the limits, like I said. But Agility is our Genji, super excited to play Genji again. Grimm's always happy to play McCree whenever that's possible, which he couldn't really do when it was quad tank, but we sometimes make it work. And then our Ana probably wants, our Ana likes Zen, so if that's the thing too. And then our, you know, Reinhardt and Lucio, they're gonna stick on Reinhardt and Lucio. Maybe some monkey here and there. But yeah, so me personally, I feel like I'm getting weaker, but you know, I'm gonna step up my practice and work on my Zarya if that's the thing. If Tracer's a thing or Widow's a thing, I would love to play those. Those are actually my secret mains. I just had to drop them for comp play because they're
really viable. Wow.
Yeah, Tracer and Widow are my secret mains. Yeah. So I'm excited about that.
That's good.
I think this patch helps you guys simply because your two DPS players are so incredibly talented. You know, Grim Reality, honestly, McCree. Like I think it is a top three McCree in NA, maybe more than just NA. And Agility is obviously really good Genji. So I almost put a question in here that's total fanboy question of just like, what's it like to play with these godlike DPS players, because they're so good.
Grim was amazing. I love watching those guys. Holy crap, yeah.
It's actually funny that Grim got so much attention in the beginning. People didn't even know that it was like insane. Finally, Agility started to get more attention.
Yeah.
And then that actually, it might have actually even like helped Agility's be better. He's like, Grim's always getting attention, I got to step it up. And Agility's gets all the attention for like a while, and then Grim had to step it up. And then it's like a good little relationship that just lets them go insane. But yeah, I was really sad. The one thing I didn't like about the NG spectating was they'd always go to third person for Genji, because I talked to them a bit about it, and they're like, yeah, we like third person, and then we'll show a first person replay later. But when you see Agility's Genji first person, he's insane. Like, you don't know what's going on, so I get why they go third person. You have no idea what's going on, but it's still amazing. Just like, he's like three moves ahead of like your eye trying to track him. You're like, what's happening? And then everyone's dead. And it's like, okay, that's pretty awesome. yeah, he's insane. Grimm's insane. I hope they get to shine in the patch. Unfortunately, I don't really like McCree plus Genji in the same comp, which is always a little sad.
I agree.
Yeah, it's kind of on that one, different. Yeah.
Hard. It's really hard to make that work. But yeah.
Jace, cool. Any follow-up to that? Or?
Kind of. I don't know. I'm just curious about like how you feel like the opportunity for this was for you guys. Like, do you feel like you can compete? Or I don't know if you guys scrim Fnatic and Envious and Cloud9 before they had left to Korea. But do you feel like you can compete on equal footing as them? Or do you feel like there's still things you have to work on as a team before be able to like match up and go head-to-head?
It's really hard to say, but to answer your first question, no, we did not get a chance to scrim, though. We scrimmed with Envious once, like, months ago, and then they've always just been in a different country. We scrimmed, like, Fnatic a few times. But no, we haven't gotten to scrim Envy, Fnatic, or any of the European teams that much at all, so it's really hard to answer that question. But I'm really
excited. Well, Gosu Gamers has you as the number two team in the world right now.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
On their ranking, which is primarily based on, like, prize money tournaments that you've won. But yeah, that's, you got some big shoes to fill there.
Oh yeah. Like, I'm super happy with that. Obviously, you know, Misfits and Rogue probably like decayed down because they're just not in tournaments. Fnatic doesn't play any mini tournaments either. So I don't view it as us being better than them, obviously, but I am really proud of that because, even back last summer when we were still SodiPop, I would always tell my team like, hey guys, our goal is number one. That's our goal. We're going to try to do that however long it takes. You know, that was like kind of like a year long plus goal for us. I'm actually like really surprised. Like some of our hard work is already showing. Like I didn't expect us to do this well in this tournament. Our goal was always just like, you know, to be the best team we can be by the time the league comes out. Cause we don't know if we're going to be forced to split up or whatever. So I always told the guys, our goal is number one. And if not number one, our goal is to be as good as we can be by like August or whatever of 2017. So it's really awesome to see that happening now. But whenever I told them that, like, I was very confident in our team, but I always thought they were like, yeah, we're just going to improve. We're like 20th right now in Gosu. We're just going to try to get better. But now that it's just very symbolic to have us like on that number two slot right below Envy. And I think that really just gives the rest of my team confidence if they didn't have it before that we could really contend for that top spot.
You guys were the perennial underdogs. I mean, SodiPop was this team that kind of came out of nowhere and then started gaining all these fans with your play in the Overwatch Open. But you can't be the underdog anymore with this kind of performance. You just won a major tournament. But fair to the rest of the teams out there, this tournament was lacking a lot of the most notable names in the scene. So yeah, it's really, really going to be interesting to see how you guys stack up once the next big thing comes out, but it's probably not going to be for a while, right? Because everyone's playing in Apex for the foreseeable future.
Or is it going to be a while?
Jason, how long? Is it going to be a while? God, Jason, you do this every episode.
Not every team, but yeah, four of the top teams are there. So, but there's still plenty of teams to make a very compelling event, and hopefully maybe ESL will come up with some kind of event at a... some kind of big event or travel show in the near future.
No comment.
No comment. Okay.
I want to ask Hype though a personal question, because I mean a lot of people know you from Hearthstone. Yes. How was your transition from Hearthstone over to Overwatch?
It was great for me. I was a little slow to get into like the actual competitive scene. Like there were like scrims happening like in the first beta that I would just like didn't even know how to even get into, but that's okay. I was still like, if I got in there, I would have got like smashed. I didn't know what I was doing. I still had like a wireless mouse at the time, 60-year key. Like I didn't know anything.
But the mechanics from Hearthstone didn't transfer over to, I mean, nah, come on.
Nah, yeah, no, with the wireless mouse. But yeah, no, it's been awesome. Like when I played Hearthstone, I kind of had this pent up like energy because you can't really translate effort into skill that easily. Like I practiced so hard for some tournaments and then I get knocked out the first round. And it's just really hard to like, so I had all this energy that I wanted to put towards something. And then finally I had to Overwatch a game with mechanics. And I was always just a Blizzard fanboy. I played like every Blizzard game. So I was going to play this.
One of the best WoW players for a long time too. If people don't know the history of Hype.
But yeah, I just had all this energy that I wanted to put into a game. And then Overwatch was it. And I just put it in. And then slowly I was playing catch up to a lot of these guys that had a lot of FPS experience. And I still think I am. But I'm enjoying it a lot. I was really worried about the team aspect because, you know, I liked Hearthstone because it's solo. You just worry about yourself. And I didn't know if I'd struggle with the team atmosphere, but turns out I feel like I do pretty well on the team, and other people have like, I hear a lot of horror stories about people having trouble just being on the team. I'm thankful that doesn't exist like at all on our team. Like everyone on our team is like super teamwork oriented and friendly and awesome and not toxic. So,
oh wow.
So, if you had no FPS history, what was the hardest part about Overwatch to learn for you then? Was like movement, aim mechanics? I'm just curious the development of your skill.
Probably just aim. I just like talk to friends about like, oh yeah, you got to have like a big mouse pad, low sense, and all this, and like. Kind of like hesitant to that at first, like I'd have like way too high sense and just slowly lowered it over time and like got the 144 monitor and just stuff like that and just playing constantly.
Okay.
No, that's cool. It just shows you that it doesn't matter, you can come from anywhere as long as you know you put in that practice or you at least have that base ability, you know, you can transition even to an FPS game. So with Korea, so you know, obviously Korea seems to be the place that a lot of teams are wanting to go to, you know, with OGN and everything. Would you guys jump at the opportunity to do that? You know, like move over there and play there for 3 months?
Oh, 100%. If for no other reason that, like, for example, we can't scrim NVC9 and Fnatic because they're over there. And in addition to that, they're getting all these cool scrims against all the Korean teams that are, you know, of equal level as well. Whereas, like, you know, we have to scrim. I can't even scrim. And we can't even scrim the people in Europe. So we're left with just like a few people in NA that are all like, probably tier two. So if for no other reason, like I wouldn't care if we get knocked out right away. I just want to scrim all those good people over there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So you feel like the talent in NA right now is maybe a little bit lacking compared to other regions? Or like
it's hard to say, but when you watch some of these OGN games of these teams that like aren't even like the big names, like you can tell there's a lot of hard work and talent happening over there, and I think they work harder, it seems like, especially because there is OG in the first place than some of the NA teams. But I do know some of these NA teams are stepping up their game recently.
Cool.
Okay.
I want to give you the opportunity to like ask or to say if you could change one thing about the meta or like one thing about a certain hero. Do you have anything like off the top of your head that you just are really frustrated with or like a change you'd really like to see to make it easier to play like a certain hero because of like a weird funky mechanic? Like for instance, Reinhardt Earthshatter is really crap in the way it works and sometimes doesn't work.
I would just say just even with the changes, Hook is still just a very frustrating thing to play against. It can like a good Roadhog can just get some nutty hooks and carry the game almost alone. Like that's what we're worried about when we're playing against Ghost. Connor Jay has that capability of just hooking you and hooking you and hooking you and just demoralizing your whole team. We really had to shut him down, but it's like you just have to stay so far back and the play style's changed and I really don't like it. So that would be my change.
Is it that, like
I'm so glad
shot?
You said that. We've talked about
everything so about much it. Like, on the show. Like if you get hooked max range, like you look like that idiot that gets hooked and like causes your team, but like really like sometimes you can't really do anything and it just feels.
What is it, the displacement or is it the fact that it can like instantly kill you that frustrates you or is it both?
Well, I mean, it would be the range because I mean, even if the Roadhog wasn't there, like teams would get better just focus firing the hook anyways. So like just the range and the displacement is just a little bit too much.
Okay.
Yeah, I think the range was actually one of the things I had the most issue with.
And it's a little too easy to hit. Should be harder to hit.
Well, they tried to make that part at least a little bit better, just given that it breaks. But yeah, I think overall people are starting to realize and agree that it was more of a buff in a lot of ways than it was a nerf. So yeah, it's cool. That's an interesting thing for you. So it's just Roadhog? Any other?
That made my heroes? Main change. Okay. Otherwise, I just want probably the same thing Blizzard wants is just like all heroes to be viable. Yeah. I just want so many heroes. I want to be able to swap heroes like multiple times mid game. Like I'm supposed to be the flex player. That's my role, but it's really just like Zarya D.Va. And then
I know flex just kind of means Zarya.
Yeah.
in most teams. Like, oh, I'm the flex player. Oh yeah. So you play Zarya. Okay.
They off tank. Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, I want Overwatch to be in a place where you can just swap all over the place.
Gosh, cool. That'd be crazy to cast if it was though. Can you guys imagine that? Like if they're just constantly switching, is that
I would just be happy
cool
to cast again.
Yeah. Yes. Same. I feel you, Jason. Well, okay. So we talked a bit about the meta and what you'd like to see change. Let's talk about some upcoming changes. We already touched on the D.Va buff, but there's actually another buff that is potentially coming to Bastion of all characters. So that, I don't know if you guys saw this.
I didn't see this.
Was just circulating yesterday. But basically, they want to make it so that Bastion can melt. They want to make Bastion a tank and shield buster, and less of just an all-purpose DPS. So the proposed changes were that get rid of headshots for Bastion and decrease the accuracy of his gun, but make it so that you can get into the deployed mode and get out of it much quicker. So it's less of like, okay, you're in it and you're totally going to die if you're in a bad position. So basically you can go into the deployed mode a lot faster and dole out a ton of damage to large targets, but not so much against smaller targets. They're also talking about making it so the heal would have a would be a resource similar to D.Va's Matrix, and you can use Bastion self-heal while moving. So basically you're going to see heal is going to be used all the time, like whenever you're moving and you've taken damage, you can heal really quickly. So basically Bastion will become much more mobile and probably a lot more effective against tanks, but still just as susceptible, if not more susceptible, to Genjis and Tracers and Pharahs and stuff like that. But yeah, I don't know. We didn't have it in the script because it just came like yesterday, but I wanted to open that up for you guys to discuss. What do you think?
I stopped listening when you said Bastion.
I actually like the changes. I think they make a ton of sense.
Wow. I think it's interesting. I mean, Shield Buster, is it basically supposed to, I mean, are trying to maybe nerf Ryan a bit or maybe get Ryan out of the meta a bit?
Leave because, Ryan alone.
I mean, he's already getting like popped. I mean, his shield goes down so fast right now, even when you do, you know, have like D.Va's and Zarya's and everything just basically shooting at it. So do we actually need something like that?
When the four tanks were like super popular and like there's no like real hard counter. I don't know if hard counters have a place, but like it should make sense that like the super DPS guy should be able to kill the tanks that aren't that ranged from range, but it just didn't really work out. The only problem, or I don't know if it's a problem, but when I think shield break, I think more of offense. I mean, he's kind of good on defense, but like I feel like you could just swap to Genji and just kill him instantly if he's on defense. So it kind of moves him more into an offensive role, like maybe just like first point King's Row, something like that, where shield break's always been super popular. I don't like the removing of headshots. I get where they're coming from, but I hate when they do that because, you know, that's just that extra like skill ceiling that top players can really work on. Like, for example, Zarya doesn't have headshots, but like if you could track someone's head as Zarya, like I feel like you should be rewarded.
Yeah, definitely.
But yeah, I want more headshots. I want headshots on every
headshot.
Yeah, the fair one. Yeah, that one was a little. I wouldn't mind. Honestly,
I wouldn't mind either. That would be great.
Like, Zarya right click headshot, same thing, just on their head.
That's true.
So I think, I think headshots should be for everybody, or some form of like higher mechanical ceiling would be nice. So I don't like the removal of headshots. But yeah, I would kind of want to keep them more of a defensive character if possible, just because I like the fact that if you have strong defensive characters that can only be played on defense, then you have just more variety across the board. You don't have as many mirror comps. So like you have Maze on defense right now. You don't really see much Junkrat, but it'd be cool if they can make Junkrat like used on just even just like this map on defense would be cool. It just adds more variety, I think.
Okay. Yeah, Bastion could use some help though. That'd definitely be nice to see at least some kind of big changes to him, because there hasn't been a change to him since they removed the shield way back when, you know, and reduced or just, you know, changed him in that fashion. I guess he got out of sentry mode a little bit faster. I think they made that tweak along the way, but nothing major to him. So it would be cool to shake him up a bit.
Just give him a third mode where he can fly. Yeah. Deploy himself in high positions. Yeah.
An alternate ultimate.
The bird carries him. It actually just carries him around. Oh, God. That's a buff bird.
Or it could be a rooster. Yeah, it could be a rooster like the current skin. No, that'd be great. But it looks like some big news was just announced, I guess, just now, which is kind of crazy. Ben, you want to?
Saiku in chat dropped the link for us and asked if we had talked about it. No, we haven't. Apparently. 3 of the 6 members of Ghost Gaming have departed the team. So Ajax, Connor J, and Blam are going to be... actually, Ghost announced that they're leaving after you know, getting pretty damn far in the NGE tournament, much further than a lot of people would have expected, which leaves the team with Michael, Bebe, and iRemix. A bit of a surprise. I mean, they literally just got picked up 2 days before this Winter Premier tournament, which happened this last weekend. So they were with the team for approximately a week or less than a week. So that's a little bit interesting to see them depart, but sure, there's always a good reason for all of this behind the scenes.
Yeah, like OverGG said they were actually going to be splitting before. After the tournament. So.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
At least they stayed together for the tournament. You know, we've seen people break up mid tournament, so at least those guys were able to keep it together during that
time. It's kind of weird. They told us about this. We all knew that these three and those three were splitting. And so there's like talk of like, okay, so are the three, are they going to fight harder to get like to prove that they're on like an awesome team and they should all stick together? Mm-hmm. Because obviously like Baby Bay has like the history that like some that might be for scaring away sponsors. So, but maybe if they like, if they fought super hard and they took first, then like sponsors would be willing to look past, give a second chance, that sort of thing. And we weren't sure if they were bringing that into their competition. They're like really like fighting for their lives, which it seemed like they were. So,
yeah, seemed like they played that way.
We you know, we crushed their dreams. So
we crushed their dreams.
I'm just kidding. Yes.
You killed them. You killed them.
Yes.
No remorse. Wow.
They were pretty confident too. So I'm sure it was extra special, just being able to I guess shut them down at the end. But that's pretty surprising. I mean, given how well they did, you'd think that maybe there was some reconsideration there, but three people, half your team, like splitting up, man, that's is that a personality thing for you guys, or is it just like more business? I don't know. Maybe there's three other guys that Ghost had in mind, or I don't know. Or was this even before the Ghost deal that the three guys were going to leave? I guess that was right. That's probably pre Ghost.
People are saying, yeah,
yeah, yeah. That's crazy.
Guys, look at Hyped. He knows something.
I do know something. He knows something. Ruin it for them, but I would say just keep your eye on what's happening with... Yeah, something cool is going to happen with Ajax, Connor, and Blam.
Does it... I could probably guess it. Does this have to do with TSM?
I don't want to reveal anything. But
don't put him on the spot like that.
Yeah. But no, that's not what I saw. The more interesting part would be not who they're signing to, but... where they're gonna find the other three? It's interesting, but
no, it's gonna be the Misfits Luminosity Rogue trade, but with two teams.
It's even cooler and crazier. And
what?
Even cooler.
I don't
and
think
crazy.
It's gonna work, but okay. Props if they can make it work, it'll be awesome. And even if it doesn't work, it's still gonna be super entertaining. So
four team trade.
I mean, there's still a lot of free agents out there, guys.
Yeah.
Totally. We talk about it basically every week, and we probably will until they are not free agents anymore.
Energy.
I just chat now.
Energy. Oh, okay. Okay. Well, that's why we have the show, so we can talk about all these like rumors and, you know, all these player swaps. It's like TMZ Overwatch style here, man. It's crazy. But
so
another,
we can move on then.
Yeah, another bit of news. I think. Well, another event that's coming up: Assembly Winter 2017.
Somebody... Jason is casting another tournament. Yeah, congrats.
Get wrecked, fish sticks. No, yeah. We're casting that from our office here in Cologne. But yeah, Poopy, actually, who is like a pro player in like the closed beta and really hasn't been focused on playing professionally, more streaming. I think this is his like casting debut in Finnish. Mm-hmm. We got teams. We got NIP there. We got Ents. We got Helsinki Reds and Skitlight Gaming. Really curious to see how Helsinki Reds do. I've heard a lot of good things about them. But I think it's probably a pretty clear who's going to be winning the entire tournament. Or I at least hope so.
Never know,
I would kind of
hope
that if he hasn't fallen that far.
Yeah. I mean, we were talking about NG a little bit and thinking Complexity was going to do super well, and didn't happen. You know, Mortal, obviously.
I blame their manager, Tifa.
Wow. Blame their manager?
Wow.
Just because I can.
You're just a bad person, Jason.
She gave me bruises at DreamHack. She punched me so many times.
So mean. But yeah, that's good. That's definitely great to see another tournament in EU and
a European tournament. Oh
yes,
my god!
I know.
There's a European tournament actually happening. It's only for 5,000 euros, so it's not actually a very big one.
Doesn't matter.
Only four
man.
Teams. And how many tournaments now? How many LAN finals in the last 2-3 months have we had that have had between 4 and 6 teams? It's like almost every tournament is like, okay, MLG had 8. All right. The cap is like 8 right now. All these teams are being flung to Korea, to all these different regions. Some, you know, some teams are in team houses in NA, but half their team is in Europe. It's just weird and confusing right
it's
now.
Really expensive.
But
it brings up.
Yeah, it is. But it's another tournament that's like, it's a tournament, but it's really not that exciting in some ways because it's really not that many teams. And I don't know.
It's also Finnish only too for this tournament. Yeah. So it's not like you can be, you know, rogue engine or anything like that, unfortunately.
Well, that
but should be good. Should be good. I mean, we got to see with NG like a lot of teams that I've never heard of, like coming up, up and coming. This might give you know chance for LCK and Skitlight.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. Well, I mean, you kind of this might be a decent segue into the topic of the week, which we'll do in just a second. But before that, I just want to give a shout out to some of the iTunes folks that have, or at least one of the iTunes listeners that left a 5-star review of it for our podcast on iTunes, as well as a nice comment. Master Free Skill or Free Kill, thank you so much for doing that. And if you guys do listen to the show on iTunes, you can just, if you do enjoy the show, leave a 5-star review. It helps us out greatly because it helps people be able to find the overview when they're looking for Overwatch podcasts. So yeah, think about doing that because it would be amazing if you did. But anyways, topic of the week. So this is like a segment that you know we're going to start doing a little bit more and just brings up general things. Like we talk about a lot of stuff on the show, but it's not really you know centralized on a specific you know discussion topic. But this week, given that you know we were just talking about events kind of being everywhere, I figured it'd be kind of good to talk about something that was being discussed on the Reddit thread, which was how do we boost Overwatch esports popularity right now? Because right, you know, with some of the viewership right now for the events, you know, we're not seeing the highest numbers. I mean, we keep talking about the World Cup, you know, that happened at BlizzCon, and it was you know 200K or whatever. But ever since then, you know, we haven't really seen any huge numbers. I mean, MLG was hard to see, you know, because they obviously were streaming it on something else. And, you know, we have this weird fragmentation when it comes to even just where everything is being streamed and where the events are. So let's kind of talk about it. So right now I feel like, you know, it's very decentralized, you know, in terms of what everybody should be watching and when, but I kind of want to see where you guys, you know, what you guys think generally with popularity. What do you think are the biggest issues right now?
It's just an interesting situation because the individual player streams are doing very well right now. We've seen a lot. Basically, if you're a player for a top team, you're going to get really good viewership if you stream regularly. So there's obviously a really big desire to watch super high level play. Folks that have really high SR ratings, you don't even have to be on one of the top teams, but if you have a top 100 account and you're streaming, you're going to get great viewership like every single time. So it's extremely clear that there's a large group of dedicated fans who want to watch super high level gameplay. That hasn't really translated, though, to tournament viewership yet. I mean, if you look at other esports titles, top players, you know, top players in Dota and League and CSGO can get 10 to 20,000 plus viewers. But we're seeing already in the very early stages of this game, top Overwatch players get in the 5 to 10K range, like, very consistently. So to me, that's a very encouraging sign. But how we translate that to actual tournament viewers and people who follow the game is going to be pretty difficult. And there's a million different things I could say, but I'll let I know Jason is eager to jump in there. So I'll jump in later.
Oh, I mean, we have like good contrast here. We have like from a caster point of view, we have from a player point of view, we have from an audience point of view. So like for me, there's no in-game feature. Like you look at CSGO, the major they just had in Atlanta for E-League, 1 million viewers on Twitch. A lot of that also comes from the in-game promotion in Counter-Strike. Also the ability you can literally watch the game in the client. You don't have to watch on Twitch. there's like not a lot of speccing in terms of, you compare it to League of Legends, where you can just watch high level gameplay just by free speccing it. You can't just join a game and spectate. There's no incentive to watch necessarily, like there is in Heroes of the Storm with portraits, or in CS with cases. Major events have kind of disappeared. There's just only Apex.
Really, it was like ESL Atlantic Showdown, Overwatch Open were and maybe World Cup were like really the only like big.
I think MLG was well viewed. It's just we couldn't see anything. I mean, you know, it wasn't on the optimal platform. It wasn't.
No, YouTube showed the viewership, and so did MLG. It was something like 16K viewers.
Yeah, but if it was on Twitch, I mean, come on, let's be real. If it was on Twitch, though, it would have been triple.
Hey, I didn't say that.
Quad that. I'll say it. It's definitely would be triple quad that if it was on Twitch. So that was, again, like I thought a well executed event that was just not shown in an optimal platform, which sucks. I know why they did it, but it just sucks from the standpoint of trying to grow, you know, Overwatch esports.
There's also a lack of history between teams too.
Yeah. Like, let's see what Hype says here. Hype, what do you think?
History.
Yeah.
Yeah. This is not like my area of expertise. I don't think I just play the game as hard as I can, you know. Yeah. But I would say these are like all long term things, nothing quick. First of all, I just want more heroes in the game, and then the game's really complicated. But if you're a newer player and you see like you have a favorite player that plays your favorite hero and you get to watch that, that's like really cool. Even if you don't play the game, like you're gonna watch like Seagull play Genji, and you're gonna like learn something. You're gonna take it to your quick play game, and like that's fun, even if you don't even know what's going on in the game, right? I think that's really cool. Another thing is Esports Arena is doing this 3v3 tournament, and if they can figure out how to make that like super easy access and fun to play, like that would be cool. Like if people, like they can't really form a team, they don't really understand like the intricate details of Payload, because like the game doesn't even teach you really how to play Payload. It's kind of weird, but you know, they know how to 3v3 arena. It's simple, and like that was something in WoW that like they started with the 5v5 arena, but the 3v3 arena, like everybody loved it more. It's like way simpler. It actually kind of killed off 5v5 arena, which we don't really want that happening with Overwatch. But I think 3v3 becoming a thing would be really awesome personally.
Is it something that the players are interested in, 3v3? Because I know I've talked 1v1 with some of the characters, I mean some of the players, and they're just like, I'm not even interested at all, like in stuff like that. But 3v3, I haven't really gotten a chance to get a sense from how the player pool feels about that.
I think players that are already on teams are not that interested. Like they're kind of talking about it, but they're not really as interested in it. But I think it's like for people that don't have teams yet. I think that would be really cool.
Okay.
And then one more thing would be like the incentives thing you're talking about. Like, I think if people got to like know the pro players and teams better, and they can pick their favorites and they know the stories, like that just makes it way more interesting. Like, for example, I don't play Hearthstone anymore, but like just like they did this thing where you on the website for BlizzCon, you just pick someone and you get like a few packs if they win. Like, it's really not that much incentive, but that alone was like, yeah, I do want to root for Amnesia. And then I watched all Amnesia's games, even though it's like only 3 packs, like who cares, right? But it was enough to get me to watch the games and be interested in it. And I actually like really enjoyed the Hearthstone BlizzCon tournament, even though I hadn't been watching any Hearthstone at all before that.
Yeah, it's definitely engagement wise, it was a very, very smart thing to do. And it would be great to do that, I guess, with teams in Overwatch, something similar to that. But again, I feel like in the summer we were able to stack momentum pretty well, like with the Atlantic Showdown into E-League, and we just are not doing that well right now in the winter. And NGE is actually something that was successful in my eyes, because it started with one of these things where, who the heck are these people? Like, I don't even know these casters, and like this is like completely a new thing, and nobody was watching. And then eventually, you know, NGE got up to, I don't know, what did it get up to this weekend? Like 20K, maybe 15, 20K or something like
that. I would honestly hope way more than that.
No, it wasn't. Well, it definitely wasn't way more than that. We can check right now.
Okay, so we did Alienware Monthly Melee last 2 weekends ago, and we had 27,000 people watching for a monthly for $5,000. I do not want to believe you had a $100,000 tournament for 15K people. I don't want to believe that's possible.
It was also during the CSGO major.
It was during the CSGO major too. That's true.
But yeah, that's what they got.
Yeah, and again, it was, there's a combination of things. NGE is still very, very new to the scene, and you know, with Immortals and Ghosts too. I mean, they're not like big name teams. Where, you know, Alienware, I think you had bigger name teams at the time, at least. You know, maybe
no,
not. Nope.
We had Luminosity as the biggest known team.
Oh.
Spicy Boys.
Oh, Spicy Boys, that's right. On Hammer, true. You're right.
Yeah, so, like, we didn't have any big name teams.
Yeah, yeah, you're right. You're
all
right.
19.4. 19,412. 19.4?
Okay.
That's what it peaked at.
Yeah, I think maybe it was a CSGO thing. I mean, we did have a million viewer CSGO major happening at the time, too. So I think a lot of organics might have went that direction, where Alienware, there was nothing going on during that time. So, but again, like, the prize pool doesn't matter. I don't think the prize pool matters at all. Like, it matters from the standpoint of whether it's smart to, like, yeah, I mean, whether these people that are investing into that, you know, event is going to get what they're paying for, I guess, you know, get at least some kind of value out of it. But from the standpoint of, you know, oh, it's $100,000 prize pool tournament, they should get a ton of viewers. That's not guaranteed. That's not assumed, you know. So, you know, I still think it was... I don't think it was a failure, NGE, by any means. And
I mean, just packing the crowd like that alone is great. It's fantastic. I mean, they had a lot of sponsors. At least they were running a lot of sponsor ads for, like, movies and major brands. Yeah, so obviously NGE has some kind of good sales team, so they probably made back their money.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, just to go back to the general question, there's... of how to boost Overwatch esports. There's one really, really, really obvious answer, which we haven't said yet, which is simply just launch the OW League. We've talked about this for weeks and weeks and weeks on the show. The fact that all the tournaments are so disparate and half the best teams in the world are all in Korea, and people are trying to host tournaments with, like, the other remaining teams. And if you're not going to have Envious and Cloud9 in the top Korean teams and not even... you know, not even necessarily all the top NA teams even playing in this 100K tournament, it's just not going to be that hype. And the fact that this weekend we've got a Finnish-only tournament, and that's the only major esports event happening for Overwatch is this one 5,000 euro tournament. Obviously, clearly, it's like, it goes without saying, once there's a very consistent league with all of the top teams, you're going to see a lift. This is by far the biggest missing factor. Anything else is ancillary to that. I mean, there's a lot that could be done to improve spectating. We're going to see storylines evolve between the teams and players over time. But really, the biggest problem is really clear. It's just the lack of consistent tournament play with all the top teams. We just don't have it right now, period.
Yeah, I'd agree with that for sure. And it's so weird because, you know, we had periods where we were literally every weekend we had an Overwatch event. And, I mean... I was even saying that
because,
you know,
of Apex,
and I was worried about oversaturation, right? I was talking about that, like, in summer and fall, and it's just like, man, I hope we don't get to the point where literally it's just like seeing the same matches over and over again. Now we're like the complete opposite, which is like crazy. Even with Apex going on, why isn't there, you know, more? I mean, we're seeing Alienware at least starting up again, but why aren't there more things? We used to have at least Gosu's every weekend and things like, or every week, and we're not actually even seeing that, you know, happening right now. So it's a missed opportunity
as well. Like, a lot of it is Blizzard not giving out licenses to people who want to run tournaments because they're being very, very cautious, especially with what happened at MSI.
I forget, with Overwatch, are the license whether they have to give license or not, is that based on prize pool or is that based on, like, anything? Like, you're not allowed to... Anything? Wow.
There's a certain limit of, like, 10K where Blizzard then will get involved and have, like, a little bit of control over it. But I think Blizzard can technically give you, like, the yes or no on everything if they really wanted to.
Wow. Okay.
And then you have, like, a limit you can hit a year. So, like, 50K prize money is all you can do for an entire year. And if you go over that, then you need a license. So you do even need to do 10K at a time. I don't know. They're just being really protective, I think, of Overwatch at the moment with how MSI went with the Overwatch League.
I mean, regardless, as a tournament organizer, the value proposition in throwing a huge tournament right now is not huge because you have Apex with all of the most famous teams, all of the highest skill teams, the ones that have the most fans, they're all in Korea right now.
Right.
All of them. Yeah.
So, hyped as a player, I mean, you'd play in small tournaments right now too, right? I mean, you guys, Immortal, would play in any tournaments right now or no?
I would play in any tournament. Sometimes my team gets a little burned out though. We dropped out of the Alienware monthly melee because they just needed more time to prep for NG. But if we weren't in the NG finals that week, we definitely would have been in there.
Okay. It's another opportunity. I think it's another great opportunity for teams, you know, to continue to get points on Gosu and as well as, you know, keep establishing their names because eventually, maybe when Apex ends, there will be some kind of big tournament before the big, you know, the big Overwatch League announcement. And I mean, I'm looking forward to that. Unfortunately, it doesn't look like we're going to have a build up to that.
Dude, give me an all-star. Give me like the two most voted in teams from NA, two from EU, or like one NA, one EU, one Korea. Yeah. Give me like a China team. Mm-hmm. Give me team from each region, like a basically World Cup, but not being voted in by players. And let's just go ham, you know what?
Yeah.
Bishix, let's go. Let's go cast this.
Okay, I'll pose a very...
Anytime.
I'll pose a maybe a possibly controversial a statement and say, is OGN hurting? Is OGN Apex actually hurting Overwatch esports? Instead of helping it, because you know everybody's first inclination is that oh, you know that league, it's OGN, it's amazing, it's in Korea, and you know obviously highest level of play there, and people wanting to go there, and top teams going there. But in the end, because of the times at which it's being played live, you know obviously the live viewership isn't necessarily the highest. I think maybe we got to, I mean, what's the numbers for that? Like Ben, like this morning, for instance, like what did
for
it get to?
OGN?
Yeah.
15? I believe they've been hitting about 12 to like 18K.
Okay, 12 to 18. That's not too bad, but
yeah.
Given that's supposed to be the top, you know, this is supposed to be it, right? I mean, we should be getting awesome times too, but we can't.
To be fair, though, in League, like they never got a ton of viewers either.
It's true.
Like LCS always out-trumped OGN when it came to viewers every time.
Right.
I never saw OGN break like 50K for League, even like at the highest moments. But it's not about that. Like, this is so weird to say, but the only way that OGN hurts Overwatch right now is because they do such a damn fucking good job. Like, seriously, like, if you want to run a tournament, if you can't run it as well as OGN and Apex, then you're not probably going to be able to run a tournament. Like, they're doing such a good job that it indirectly hurts everyone else, but in a good way. So,
okay, so is it like, if OGN was actually in NA region or an EU region, just at least time zone wise for viewership, would it be more success or would it actually be helping Overwatch esport more than it already is or not? Do you think it doesn't have any, or does the locale not matter at all? The fact that it's being, you know, hosted in Korea.
I'm like, all the people that play like at the top level, like are watching these games no matter what time they're on. Like I usually end up watching the VOD. I would love to watch it live. But it doesn't matter what time it is, but unless like watching the VOD isn't as good for viewers or whatever, I don't know. But I think OGN's great just because like you were saying, the production's like so good that it really helps with the people that, you know, don't know the game as well. It's like really easy to watch when they do constant like cuts to what just happened, or some people, the player face cuts. I don't know. I like those. I don't mind them. Those are fun. And I just think that part of it's awesome. Cause like the hardest part of the game is understanding it and watching it. So they just make it a lot easier, except for the time thing. So.
Yeah. I mean, that's the biggest question I have right now. It's just because everybody always measures some, at least a lot of the, at least very, you know, flashy numbers and people actually gravitate towards these flashy numbers come from the Twitch viewers, you know, just what the Twitch numbers are, what the highs are. And right now I just like, given, you know, who is actually using the Twitch platform, you know, or just viewers that are on the Twitch platform. Most of them don't come from that region. You know, they have their own kind of, you know, like when things are in China, you know, China has their own streaming services and, you know, the numbers are there. So we don't actually get a chance to see those until, you know, they're announced or whatever. But with Korea, you know, I think it's one of those things where we see some of it. And then, you know, obviously we see the Twitch numbers too. And they're not as high as I think they could be if they were in optimal times, like for you know, just a lot of the Overwatch fans.
Well, we also don't know like the numbers from TV, right? Because OGN is actually broadcasted in Korea on television. So we miss out on a large opportunity of that. And I mean, Korea is what, the largest consumer of esports? Would that be fair to say?
Is it still? Historically, yes, but is it still? I don't know if that's true.
Let's just say one of the largest consumers of esports. So like,
yeah.
I mean, there's a lot of viewership we don't see necessarily, but the thing is, like, if you ever talk about League of Legends, you always talk about Korea and, like, the teams, right? Like, it might not get the viewership the same as LCS, but everyone knows Korea. Everyone knows the teams that are playing there. Like, everyone knows Ruge Hong and Miro from the World Cup.
No, I'm not saying that it's like we're lacking in exposure for some of those Korean players. I don't think that's the case. I mean, you know, shows like ours and, you know, whether it's like, you know, the Oversight and just some of the others and even just the competitive Overwatch subreddit. Yeah, we're going to all be talking about the best players and we know about them. It's more the general public. You know, it's more about getting traction from organically or whatever. You know, like how does CSGO get a million viewers? It's not purely just hardcore people. They're getting just because of like the crazy hype that you see. When you see a giant number like that, you're going to watch it even if you're not even into CSGO because it's just really cool. Like it's an esport event moment, just general esport moment. You know, we're trying to create something like that for Overwatch. And
that's what we had for the World Cup.
Yeah, we did. I
mean, the World Cup hit that for sure. It hit that virality level where it was just growing on its own. It wasn't even necessarily hardcore Overwatch fans that were piling into that stream. It was people who wanted to see Korea versus USA versus Russia and the storylines and just the built-in viewership that was already there. Just everything together kind of blew that up. So I'm sure we'll see that again. I mean, honestly, I think the moment there's another tournament that has, let's say, 10 of the top 16 teams, it includes Korean teams and European teams and North American teams. The moment that happens, we're going to see six-figure viewership again. I'm fairly confident.
I am too. Mm-hmm.
So I really just think it's been the decentralized nature of the tournament scene right now that is kind of stunting, I guess, what could have been. We could have seen viewership-wise, but
I mean, yeah. To be fair,
it's nothing
too,
to be like, worried about. It's the early days, man.
CS was never this big at its start for Sword or for
no, CS took 2 years.
Was
League.
No,
so like, it just needs time. And like a big problem, well, not a big problem, but definitely a problem that I think maybe Hyped has been able to see as well is that the main Overwatch subreddit, which how many people is it up to now? 758,816.
Yeah.
Nothing esports related really gets there, and that's due to the fact that the game is so early in its competitive cycle. Like it needs time, and then once posts start hitting that, you'll be looking at a lot more viewers, a lot more interest in esports, I think.
Yeah, I think once it becomes a central focus, you know, esports becomes, you know, that topic or that subject or whatever it is that carries the game into, you know, longevity or whatever, that's when it'll hit it. And, you know, because if you look at League and whatever, you do see like half of the posts will be about esports whenever there's a big event. And we never see like regular posts. I mean, we see those green posts, you know, we see the stuff on the side, but we never see regular posts ever about any esport events. So I think you're right on with that for sure. But speaking of a bit of news, at least with Overwatch, that they announced that there's 25 million people playing Overwatch now, which is crazy. I mean, given just, you know, again, like it's only been out 9 months now. Is that right? 9 months? No, maybe. Eight months? I think eight
Since
months.
May?
Yeah.
Yeah, May.
Eight
End
months.
May.
And yeah. 25 million? That's absurd. That's crazy high. Yeah, so I just...
The viewership will come, right? This is proof. 25 million people played or owned this game. It will happen. It's just a matter of time.
Yeah,
at this point.
It's just bringing it to fruition. That's what we're all hoping for and waiting for.
I mean, I think what every one of us wants, like even with the maybe lack of viewership right now that there is in Overwatch esports, is a stable, constructive scene like the Overwatch League could potentially be. Like if that gets going, like for instance, Hyped, like you know you have a guaranteed paycheck every month and you're playing this team next and you know you have this consistency to it, right? Then that makes you more invested into it. It raises the play and the general play of the game, and people will be more interested in time through that.
Yeah, I'm hoping that also, like, if that comes out, like, I'm hoping a lot of these console players that, like, maybe don't even own a computer that's console version will just eventually switch over. I mean, they could have their own scene too, that'd be cool, but I feel like they would switch over. Like, that's
DPS
how I got...
Stanky.
Oh, yeah, exactly. DPS Stanky. Yeah. He's actually really good.
Yeah.
He's really good.
He's super good.
Yeah, like StarCraft 64 is like how I got into Blizzard games. I played
really
like
wow,
maybe a year.
What? Seriously?
Yeah. I played like a year's worth. Like I had it on the computer, but a computer was really bad, and like it was like a different patch too because they actually update that. Whereas I had the 64 version. I just played campaign. I played against my friends that come over. I played that for a good year before. That's how I got into Blizzard games.
StarCraft Ghost would have got me into it.
Yeah, that's
but
so
it never
cool.
Came.
Yeah, I mean, this actually falls right into one of our questions that we had from Scott P, which was, he was wondering if you guys think the, you know, what's the general viability of the competitive Overwatch console play? And if, you know, if you guys, let's see, do you think that PC will always outperform Xbox and PS4? Or do you think there will be a place for their inclusion or maybe separate? I think it's always going to be a smaller thing. If they do, you know, have their own competitive scene, it'll probably be a separate one, you know, a smaller one.
It's definitely going to be separate. It has to be. There's really no way that it could be any different. But I'd love to see the console version at an MLG, for instance, alongside Call of Duty.
That'd be cool.
Or Overwatch at EVO.
Overwatch at
How
Evo?
Sick would that be? I know it's never gonna happen, but like, oh my god, that would make me so happy if like they just threw the console version at like a fighting game tournament. Oh, that would be sick. Anyway,
why not? I mean, I guess they would probably wait until it gets a little bit more popular on its own, but they could jumpstart it by just doing it, right? That would be pretty awesome.
I'm curious what the player base is. Like, so you have 25 million players for Overwatch, mm-hmm. right, in the world. What percent of that is PC? What percent is console? And like, obviously PS4 and Xbox. I'm actually really curious about those numbers.
Yeah, I don't know the actual numbers, especially like right now, but I think I've heard like 15% in the past or 10 to 15%
in the console?
Past. Yeah, is I mean, I could be completely wrong, but I've heard those numbers before in terms of console. And you know, just the other show I do, Overwatch. So I don't know what it is at this state. So maybe somebody can tell us. I could hear somebody, but it's a decent amount, though. It's not close to PC, but it's a chunk that could definitely support a competitive scene.
Actually, I have a question for Hype that kind of relates to competitive scene in general. It kind of goes away from console. So in StarCraft. The way, I don't know if it still works like that, because I honestly, I don't pay attention that directly to this, but they changed how WCS worked, whereas your ladder ranking determined like how you got into WCS, like how you got into qualifiers.
Yeah.
Do you feel like we need something similar to that coming up to the Combine for Overwatch League to potentially stop Smurfs and to actually force people to try to actually push on their mains and become recognized?
Yeah, I was thinking about that. I don't know if this Combine thing is going to be... They definitely have to...
Or team ranked, I guess.
That's tough. Yeah, I mean, I still want just like a pure solo queue. I don't know how they stop Smurfs. I was thinking about this a while ago, but then I stopped thinking about it because I didn't think the Combine thing was going to happen. Because like, if you're on a team and you get drafted to a team with like this guy that's just like, you hate him, he's toxic. Like, how does that work? I don't know anything. I don't have faith for the Combine.
Okay, let me ask you then. Let me ask you before you move on your this talk, because I remember Flame and Clockwork brought this up at PAX East in Boston last year. If you were getting paid $1 million a year to play on this team, would you put that differences aside?
Oh gosh, I haven't thought about this at all.
Yes,
if you're getting paid enough,
like $1 million, yeah, probably.
Sports, if you're getting paid millions of dollars a year to play, I know I would be okay with that, dude. I might give him a little massage just because I'm getting paid so much damn money.
That's actually makes it maybe even more interesting. If you know, like, this one team all hate each other, but they're like the all-stars, but they're like, the, you know, they have the potential to win, but they're not. And that's kind of cool. That's kind of cool to have some teams like that.
Well, I think some of these, you know, some of the I don't know, some of these maybe diva-like attitudes are very difficult personalities that we see right now will be fixed, or at least they'll change whenever you do have this kind of structure and, you know, this league where, you know, you are going to be forced. You're not going to necessarily get to choose, you know, which teams that you play on. I think once that culture is kicked into play or just brought into play and really, you know, the players are able to finally kind of get used to it, I think a lot of that will change. I mean, even people that might necessarily would have clashed prior to the league, you know, they'll have the same goal. I mean, the goal is to win the league, and I think because of that, I think people will mature and you'll see a little bit less of that. Right now, we still see all of that, and that's why we see all these players swapping around. But later on, when there's contracts and stuff, yeah, I mean, they don't make the call. Like, when you don't have control of who you play with, then that there's some sense of, you know, okay, well, I need to just chill, you know, I need to just, like, you know, kind of roll with the punches then, and it'll probably be a little bit better.
See, I would actually love to see, like, a team ranked. So like for League of Legends, you have team ranked where you queue as five people and you play You actually have to play to get an invite into the challenger qualifiers. I would love to just do like a team ranked and say, hey, I want to throw a tournament. Let me go talk to the top 12 teams on the leaderboard and then have them go head to head in like a tournament for money or something like that. I don't know. Or using that as a system to do invites to tournaments or a system to do invites to something else. I feel like that could be actually really cool too. And plus it gives you a proper scrim. And at the same time, it gives you something to win. You know, it gives you something to push for.
Yeah. What do you think of that hype?
Yeah, it would be awesome. But I just know that when I queue, like I would love, like when I queue up solo queue, there's every once in a while, there'll be that game where there's like 8 or 10 top 500s, but the majority of the time there's only like one or two other top 500s. And it's just, I guess, I don't know if there's enough incentive. People aren't playing ladder as much as I would like. Like I love ladder. I play it all the time. But it seems like some people would rather do other things. It's kind of like this, you know, it's kind of like an unofficial, like you're saying the combine, like you do like very slowly, you meet people and like you prove yourself. It's kind of how Spicy Boys was started. It's just, those are really good solo queue players that met each other over time, and over time they finally found six. But I don't know if there's enough people playing high level comp right now.
Well, when I mean team queue, I mean like you have to queue as a six. I'm not sure if that was conveyed.
Oh, well,
like you actually queue Immortals and you actually get Cloud9 for some reason because you're both trying to like increase your rank on the team leaderboards.
How do you get them to play that over scrimming though? Like what kind of incentives do
that can cause direct invites to tournaments, or it can be maybe prize money for the entire season. Invites to combine. I don't know. There's always potential, like even for like challenger teams in League of Legends, like you have to play team ranked and then like the top X amount play in the qualifiers for challengers. So it gives the teams who don't have a chance to get into Overwatch League necessarily a chance to prove themselves. I don't know. I think there's a lot of potential in that.
Okay.
Well, StarCraft 2 has an automated tournament system.
Yeah.
Where every day for each league, there are several tournaments that happen on like every couple of hours that you can sign up for, and then you automatically get placed in. Something like that would be really cool for Overwatch, especially if there is a team queue. Maybe it gives you, you know, even if it was just like, oh, every win you get in this little mini tournament, you get an extra loot box or something like that. Some just any kind of incentive to play in that kind of format. I know I would enjoy that. I mean, I never 6Q because the way the system works right now is if I 6Q with like all of my masters and GM right. friends, we're gonna get matched up a lot of the time against like a lot of top 500 people who are higher ranked, just because the way the system works, it if you're queued up with more people, it inflates your skill rating. But some kind of system where I could get together with like some people I trust and know, and like on a Sunday playing a tournament would be so much fun. You'd take it so much more seriously than regular ranked. It would be so much more rewarding. That would be absolutely incredible and a great way for new up and coming teams to get noticed. If it was like actually, if there was actually enough incentive to play that it brought high level talent, like that'd be sick.
I think the biggest
reminds me of something.
There's
something really cool that was happening before I was on a team, and I think it's starting up again. And they're called solo queue tournaments. So you, back then, there'd be like about four teams, and you'd queue up, and then they'd randomize. But like the guy kind of knew everyone, so he kind of make the teams like even, or like you'd have to select a role or something like that. If they could do that on a higher level, that would be the coolest thing ever. And it's like, so you're stuck. You queue up, you select your role, you get stuck with five other people, and then you're with them throughout the tournament. So you learn each other, you learn how to play, and then you come back next week, and then you remember, like, you know, you start to play with some people, you play against, you get to play against them, you get to play with them, and then you start to learn like who you want on your team. And you're like, wow, this guy actually just wins no matter what team he's on. Like, for example, that was Rulf, who's now on C9. He would just win. He wasn't on a team at the time, and this is how like all these people that like clearly wanted teams would meet each other, and you'd see that Rulf would just win even though he was like a Zenyatta or a Lucio. His team would just win. He would just shot call them to victory every time. Like, wow, this guy's pretty good. I want to start a team with this guy and stuff like that. It was really cool.
That sounds really cool. And that's like, you know, outside of the game, like, you know, we don't have to like wait for them to put stuff in the game. Some of this stuff can actually happen with tools and whatnot. you know, third parties or websites, whatever. So yeah, I think that'd be great. The only thing, you know, Jason, with your, you know, idea there is just, it's literally just scheduling. Like, I don't think there's enough six queues that you could maintain this really healthy ladder, you know, just consistently. So maybe if they scheduled like a day, you know, maybe they schedule a day or a couple days during the week where it's like, hey guys, on Saturday and Sunday, we're doing like team queues. You know, or there's actually a team ladder, and you know, that day, you know, this is the day to go and get together with your six man and go and play, just so everybody will congregate during that time. Otherwise, it's just like 24 hours a day. I mean, dude, if I'm playing at 3 a.m. in the morning, there's nobody, you know, so I'm going to
be in time, like that will change. Like, once the games have been around long enough competitively, I think there'll be a lot more six stacks, a lot more teams trying to do it. Because, I mean, right now, you're not seeing six stacks because, well, if you're like a pro or semi pro team, there's no point to six man stacking for you.
Yeah.
Because you get better practice off scrims. I don't know. I think eventually it could be rewarding, but well, I definitely agree. Like right now it wouldn't be.
It'd be kind of cool to combine maybe for even for teams and practice, like combining scrims as well as trying to achieve something at the same time. That'd be possibly more efficient for them. That'd be kind of cool. Or they have to scrim as well as playing these things, which I think maybe it would be even more busy for them.
That's like something we had problems with the GoForce series for ESL. It's like Hyped, for instance, would you rather scrim and choose the teams you want to play or play in a tournament with teams you necessarily haven't heard of for 12 hours to win a couple hundred bucks total, yeah. Not just for you?
No. Yeah.
Rather scrim?
Definitely rather scrim. Although one thing I would say that is really awesome as well is like when competitive was down for a week or two or whatever, there was in Discord and pugs. And these were awesome because, you know, it would be kind of weird and you have like this picking phase and like not everyone knows each other.
In-houses, right?
Yeah, in-houses. There you go. And those were actually like, those were so much funner than playing comp anyways. And you get to, because it was much more like a scrim. And then you had a lot of people that were teamless and this was their opportunity to prove to people that, you know, they're good enough. They're looking for a team and how to just advertise themselves. And these, a lot of people met each other. I'm sure teams like were formed based off that pug period. So something like that would be awesome too.
Yeah. That's definitely an opportunity for somebody to organize these things. Like that solo queue thing was already organized. Who organized that way back when?
I don't remember the guy's name.
Yeah, because that's sure, actually a really good idea.
I think it's starting back up. I saw a Reddit post that someone wanted to start that up on Europe servers.
Yeah. Okay. That'd be good. Yeah, I think it's possible for somebody to do that right now. You know, like we have Discord servers and channels that have a ton of Overwatch people on it right now. So we should really take advantage of that and leverage that. That'd be awesome.
I know there's a lot of in-houses being done before like comp came around, like Mendo. Mendoca, I used to host quite a few of them in like a special Discord server. And like that's kind of how Reinforce got started. Like him and Mendo were just playing a lot together. And then that's how kind of Reinforce got noticed.
Yeah. Okay. All right. So hopefully we see more of that. But man, we spent a lot of time on that time. Why don't we move on to just the last few bits? Really just our week in Overwatch, just where we kind of talk about what we did in terms of play. I figured we would revisit Capture the Flag or Capture the Rooster, given that it had just come out when we did the show last week. So yeah, what are your thoughts? Or did you guys get a chance to play Capture the Rooster a bunch this week? Anybody?
I looked at the achievements. No. And then I just played two games to get the achievements and I was done.
Okay.
At first I thought people were saying like, oh, maybe Blizzard hasn't figured out how to make Capture the Flag work, but maybe this is like an experiment and people can really like play test it for real. But the maps were just not at all anywhere close to what they needed to be. The Lijiang Tower, I know they wanted to reskin it because Chinese New Year, but the maps were awful. You'd have to build its own map to even begin. I don't need a Capture the Flag mode. It would be cool if they can make it work, but I understand how difficult it is. But at the very least, you need a very specific map built around it. Because like people would just camp and I'd get a lot. There was like a draw my first round. Everyone just camped and like you couldn't.
Oh, God.
Yeah. And then then one of the maps, the flag cap range is like so short that like Asamra picked it up, TP'd back, and then it's over. Like what?
Well, he can do that almost do that in any map. Yeah. So it's.
I had a team be 2-0 up against us, and they all six just camped the flag.
How do you stop that?
You can't. I don't know. I have a lot of gripes with it. Like, in theory, it can be really cool, but like some big gripes I have is, in what other CTF game mode, if the other team has the flag, can you turn in the flag? Like, typically when both teams have the flags in their hands, you can't turn in, but in this you can. So it actually forces you to like, all right, how many people do we want to defend our flag? How many people do we want to send out and try to assassinate their flag? And it's like instantaneous. You don't need to sit there and actually wait for it to capture. Two, like I hate how it's so mobility dependent. Like a Winston, I don't know, we talked about Winston off air before
certain
we started.
Characters
like,
that are
there's an investment, at least for him, to just ult and then just jump across the map. But I've never once have been able to chase down someone who picks up the flag and actually like have a chance to take it back. And that's frustrating. It's not really capture the flag. It's like, who can pick May, wall them off, pop a D.Va to block any incoming damage, and then run the flag back without being contested?
Yeah, I mean, that's pretty much what they said. I mean, they said that the reason that they didn't make it, or they made some decisions, was basically they felt that, you know, catching a person with a flag is not going to happen very much either. So that's why they were like, oh, just allow all the abilities. It doesn't matter, you know. The main point of focus is just the capturing of the flag, you know, being able to pick it up. And I think once you pick it up and get out of that, maybe just that area, then, you know, you're pretty much good to go. I don't love it either. I mean, it's not something they can fix easily because, you know, some of the things, you can't just disable ultimates because it's not just ultimates. They're you know, like Sombra's teleporter is not an ultimate. It's an actual regular ability, or it's a, you know, it's an ability. So I don't know how you actually fix that. Part of me
likes
it.
Take away all mobility skills when you pick it up. You can't run faster as Soldier. You can't blink with Tracer. You can't teleport with Sombra. And then you can actually have a chance to contest.
Okay. Some people say you just make the flag like a vehicle. Like you get in the thing and then you're not a hero anymore. You just
really?
Drives the flag back.
Okay.
That's the idea I had for Doomfist, where like depending on the role you are, if you're defensive, offensive, tank, or support, you get different abilities when you pick up the Doomfist.
Yeah.
But no one has mobility. But that way you can still do something, but you're not, I mean, you're not as effective as you would be out of the Doomfist.
Sure. I could see that. I would feel a lot like worse on Gulch. You're slow. You're like walking with a freaking flag, and you're slow as crap.
You have like the most epic fights in Warsong Gulch, like especially when you're holding the flag forever. You take more damage, and you have to find their flag. Like I don't know, it has potential, I think, but it also is completely against what Blizzard said originally of like having certain heroes. Having certain heroes too strong for something. Because like, how do you balance like on Control Center, like a Mei walling off the entrance so Torbjorn can't do anything, and then you can just pick it up, like. You can't stop that, really.
Yeah.
I'm so excited. I remember they teased... Didn't they tease, like, a Counter-Strike mode? They're like, oh, yeah, you have the Whoits, and you got to defeat... Like, they renamed the bomb. They didn't call it the bomb. They just called it something else. And it was basically a Counter-Strike mode that Jeff talked about, like, a long time ago.
That'd be cool.
I'm down for that.
I missed that one.
Hmm. Yeah, maybe do a double points and bombs exploding. Yeah, I think it's already proven. It works. That format works quite well for CSGO. So yeah, I think that's definitely doable in Overwatch. The only thing I would say is like, yeah, there's definitely a ton of flaws. I think the current state of it is not even close to being anything viable, but it is cool to, you know, get a chance to see characters that aren't being played in competitive, you know, to any viability actually be very important in this mode, you know, like whether it's like a Torb or it's, you know, whatever it is, right? Like it's really cool. Even Sombra, right? Sombra and Teleporter, even as cheesy and something that we hate, it's cool that we're seeing those characters you know, in a different role, like compared to just straight up Overwatch or competitive Overwatch. And I don't know, it just shows you that we can do a ton with this game. And
I'm happy Blizzard's trying stuff, and like they're trying these different game modes. It's just I don't think this is necessarily one that relates to us in a competitive sense.
Yeah, agreed. Let's see, last thing, tip of the week. Jason, you had a tip, and given that we have hyped here too, Zarya, you had maybe a Zarya tip for people.
I mean, probably hype can just completely correct me on this one. I didn't know. I had a Reinhardt tip last time about shield flickering, so you can actually move quicker and or prevent your shield from dying quickly. This one was more about Zarya shields and like the three ways to use them, because there's different ways. Not your personal shield, but like shield on someone else. So like there's for energy, where you can hop it on your Reinhardt and tell him, just get me some energy. He takes his shield down, takes some hits. Or a Tracer, the same kind of thing. If Tracer go in, take some damage, recall back, and you build up your energy. There's also for initiating when your Reinhardt try to charge their Reinhardt and have its Reinhardt's charge interrupted. And there's also for saving someone, like for instance, if you're getting Roadhog hooked in. So just be very mindful, I guess, of like your shield cooldown and be very mindful of what kind of shield you're actually trying to throw out and like what position you're in the game. Because you don't necessarily want to go for energy when like the Roadhog hooks up and you don't have a Reinhardt with you kind of thing. You have to be very mindful of that kind of stuff. But there's like three different types you could go for, I guess. And this is where hype completely shuts me down. Like, no, Jason, there's like actually 18 different types of shields. You're an idiot.
Yeah, I mean, the ideal way to do it is get that super early energy shield. That way it's up in time before someone actually dies. And I think the saving shields got a lot better with Anna, because now if you actually save someone, you know, sometimes you catch the pin or you catch the hook, but they die anyways. But if you actually save someone, then it gives your Anna time to react and they heal up, and then that's insane. There was a tip on the Reddit the other day about like how to, I think it was from like Lasses' stream, and it's just like a way, it's pretty standard among pros, but if people don't know, like the ideal way to get energy is you identify the part on the map where the most crossfire is. So hopefully it's like just a flat map like King's Row. And then the ideal way to do it, in my experience, is the Zarya goes first. She self-bubbles in front of the Reinhardt, takes all that spam, and then that way the Reinhardt can see when the bubble fades, and then you rotate the bubble. Like, so whenever I do this with my Reinhardt, I just say, rotating now. And so I step in front of him with my bubble. Mm. And then when the Reinhardt can see the spam, and like maybe there's a chance of dying, they step in front of me. As I'm stepping back, I shield them. That's like the easiest way to get energy for me.
Yeah, cool. You just got to watch out for the Roadhog hooks in that situation.
Yeah, that's
right. Your shield can get busted.
You got to be really careful, because your shield can be busted in the matter of like quarter of a second. So you really just want to pop out for a split second. If you know a lot of spam is coming, just pop in, pop out. Similarly, if you're playing Reinhardt and your Zarya, your friendly Zarya shields you, it's a really good opportunity to throw a fire strike, put your shield down, rest it just for a second. Yeah. Something that high level Reinhardts are going to do every time, but once you go like two steps below high level, like everyone kind of forgets to do that at a certain point. So yeah. It goes both ways. You got to put the shields in the right time, and you got to play with the shields.
Or D.Va's holding defense matrix up when they're shielded and not taking it down.
Right. That should be
interesting. I've had some bad experiences with that.
So many times I'll like run in front of this fire with the shield on, then I'll have zero, and I'll just see like the defense matrix in front of me. I'm like, well, no, stop shielding.
Good stuff. Yeah, hopefully, you know, you guys out there will try that out and, you know, try to at least have some, do some more coordination with your Reinhardts when you're playing Azaria, or even your other tanks, whatever, D.Va or whatever. But I think that's going to be it, guys. The pretty full show there. Got an hour and a half. Hyped. Awesome to have you on. But it's time to do some shout-outs. You have any shout-outs you want to give, or where can people find you?
Shout-out to my team, Mortals, for killing it in the NGE finals. You can find me on Twitch, twitch.tv/hyped with a 3 for the E. And my Twitter is at IMTHyped, one word.
All right. Jason, you do some shout-outs?
Yeah, I'll do a little bit different than normal. I'll give my standard ones of my parents for letting me do this. I guess they'll give me the opportunity to do it. And also, a shout-out to the YouTube channel Mitch and I have called Overdrive, where we've been doing a lot of interviews lately with I think Skipjack was 2 weeks ago. We had Zappas last week, and then Too Easy this week. So you can check that out at youtube.com/c/overdriveow. And you can check out the latest interview with Too Easy.
All right. Good stuff. Fish Sticks.
Huge congrats to Hyped and Immortals for taking their first major tournament victory. I remember watching you guys at Sody Pop, so it's really cool to see you guys coming out on top. You're now the number 2 ranked team on Gozu Gamers. So got a lot to live up to there, but really looking forward to seeing how you guys fare against a lot of those other teams that are out traveling right now, and just looking forward to what's next. I'm not really sure what's next in terms of like major events. It's really just Apex. You know, this weekend we've got Assembly Winter, which is going to be on the ESL Overwatch channel. Make sure to go watch that this weekend. A pretty small tournament though, so I actually don't know even what the next really big one is. But make sure to stay tuned to our Twitters. Follow all of us. You know, I'm just Fish Sticks, spelled the same way. We'll all be talking about it and tweeting about it, and hope to be streaming this weekend. So make sure to follow me there too.
Yep. Awesome. And I'll round things out by thanking the three of you guys, particularly Hyped. You know, I've known Hyped a while, given that, you know, he was big player in Hearthstone, and you've always been one of the nicest guys, like literally in both communities, you know, whether it's Hearthstone and Overwatch. So I'm actually really happy to get a chance to have you on the show. I don't think you were ever on Valuetown, right? Like, were you ever a guest on Valuetown?
I think I did one.
Maybe one, like a long time ago, but definitely great to finally have you on this, you know, the Overwatch show. And obviously Fish Sticks Jason for doing the show with me, and all of you folks for watching. You can check out some, if you missed any of the beginning, you can check it out, the VOD on youtube.com/ChamMV. The show will be available on iTunes as always, as well as SoundCloud and, you know, Google Podcasts, basically anything, anywhere you want to listen to the overview, you can listen to it and watch it. So look for all those channels. Also, I usually post show notes and everything that we're doing with all the links on chamav.tv. So you can check that out there too. But follow us all on Twitter. It's like @chamav. Hopefully somebody in the channel will post all those too. And that's going to be it for the overview for this week. So for Hyped, Jason Kaplan, Fish Sticks, and myself, ChamMV, we'll see you next week. Later.